At Cool Air Products, we developed AC Smart Seal Quick Shot with professionals in mind. It's the only product on the market that's 3-in-1, with sealant, lubricant, and UV dye all in a single application. It's non-toxic, non-flammable, 100% safe to the touch, eco-friendly, and compatible with all refrigerants. It's a safe solution option, backed by years of R&D, Intertech tested, and has sealed millions of leaks. AC Smart Seal, the professional's choice.
We have companies out there that teach techs to go into homes and just sell things for the sake of it, to make money. A business is supposed to make money. I understand that fully. But there's certain ways to make money and do it ethically. One of the ways we can get our customers on board with indoor air quality is by monitoring first and showing them what's going on in the home. Monitoring temperature, humidity, VOCs, CO2, radon, all of those things. Monitor it and see where it takes us. And then we can show them why these things are important, why humidity control is important, why ventilation is important, why capturing particulate is important, proper filtering of the air, PM 2.5. If you don't know what that is, look it up. So we're going to talk to April Air. We have Brandon Glancy and we have Chris Howells. Both have been on the podcast before. And we're going to go through monitoring and then step by step each pillar of indoor air quality and why each one is important and how we can approach the customer and say, hey, listen, we're going to monitor first. Once we have that feedback, then we're going to look at ways we can enhance your indoor air quality. But I've been doing this for years with images and pictures and taking parts right to their desk and saying, this is why. This is why we're changing it, right? So they're not left out in the cold information-wise, and it doesn't look like we're trying to pull one over their head. So good podcast, guys. Deep dive topic. This is the HVAC Know It All podcast. I'm your host, Gary McCready. This podcast is sponsored by Master, and I keep telling you guys, they got a big ass yellow jacket wall with all kinds of fittings. Hey, they got that yellow jacket pick. They got all kinds of seals. Every time I go in, I like to look and see if I can grab some seals, some things to rebuild hoses and stuff like that, because not every charging hose is garbage with a bad seal. We can change those seals, and sometimes we can even change bits and pieces of those hose sets as well, like the depressors and stuff that push down on that Schrader core. So check out the yellow jacket wall at Master. Check out master.ca. Cintas are providers of the blue collar gear to the blue collar trades. And if you're looking to outfit your team with some uniforms, guys, we got a landing page for you guys to check out. It is cintas.com/HVAC Know It All. Check out their wide array of uniform items.
Welcome to the HVAC Know It All podcast. Recorded from a basement somewhere in Toronto, Canada. Your host and HVAC tech, Gary McCready, will take you on a deep dive into the industry, discussing all things HVAC. From storytelling to technical discussion. Enjoy the show.
All right, gentlemen, the trend of indoor air quality, I guess since probably about 2019, 2020, and you guys probably know why that is, has been trending a lot lately. So has the building science community and the building envelope and ways to tackle building envelope issues separate to HVAC issues. Because I don't know how many times I've been to a call where it's a building envelope issue. It has nothing to do with the system. The system is running full tilt. It's putting out what it should. But some rooms are cold. Some rooms are hot. It's a building envelope issue where there's not enough insulation, or there's too much infiltration, or there's something going on with the building envelope to allow the HVAC system not to perform properly. So Chris, on the screen here, you're to my right. I want to get your thoughts on the building envelope, HVAC, how they're different and how they intertwine with each other when it's all said and done.
It's a great subject. And it's probably one of the biggest changes in the HVAC industry is people that are going into the homes, technicians, sales consultants, etc., having now to have the understanding of building science. And to exactly what you say, when we have a room that's either too hot or too cold, is that really system performance? Or now do we have to have that understanding that you need to understand what wall is facing what direction and what are those insulation values, and having to now use high-end instruments like infrared cameras and manometers that measure down in pascals. So those kinds of things in looking at the industry has really allowed us as a manufacturer to take that and intertwine it into what we do in the education process and training of indoor air quality, whether it's health, it's comfort, or preserving the home.
Yeah, for sure. Brandon, what are your thoughts?
No, I have to align with what Chris said there, especially when it comes to education and information. The elements that make a building of a home, right, don't always scale together, meaning they don't always necessarily rely on what the other one's doing to ensure that they're getting their job done. So we have to think about the home as its own separate entity outside of what necessarily our equipment or the HVAC equipment is doing inside of that home singularly by itself.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I just had a really interesting podcast conversation with one of my customers, actually. He's the title of the podcast was Not Your Average HVAC Customer, or Not Your Typical. I can't remember the exact title of the podcast, but Kevin is also a home vlogger, and this is his second old century home that he's turning into his forever home. And when he moved in there, he said the envelope was so leaky, it was so uncomfortable in the home, and their air changes per hour were in the 12 area. And what he did was got a blower door, pressurized the envelope, and got this product called AeroSeal. It was like he describes it like a powder, and it kind of goes and it seals all the little cracks and crevices up to a quarter inch big. And he said within about 5 hours of that stuff being blown into the house and sealing all the cracks and infiltration, he was down to about 2 to 3 air changes per hour within about 5 hours of using this stuff. He never told me how much it costs. I never looked into that, but it's definitely something to look into if you don't want to strip back walls and replace insulation. Because, I mean, a lot of this building envelope issue is coming from drafty, leaky homes. And if we seal that infiltration up, I think we're doing a world of difference in how we can get our HVAC systems to perform a little bit better and use less energy and get our indoor air quality back in line. So, I mean, let's take the topic to monitoring, because that's kind of where we're going with this. We have all kinds of IAQ products out there. We got filtration, we got ventilation, we got humidity control, dehumidification, all kinds of products that will help with this. How important is monitoring first before we just start throwing things at a home or a building and saying, yeah, you need all of this, but not monitoring first? It's almost like when you put an HVAC system into a home without a load calculation, you're making a guess as to what the home needs, and it may not work out in its favor. Chris, again, I'll start with you on this. Monitoring, how important is monitoring all of these things that have to do with indoor air quality before we start implementing solutions?
I'll say it this way, Gary, it's the law of unseen. When we're speaking of indoor air quality, a lot of this to a lot of people, especially consumers or occupants of homes, they really don't see it. Our industry does a fairly decent job of educating when that opportunity is in front of them, but a lot of times it's reacting. Now, monitoring, in utilizing that as a tool, as a technician tool, as a sales tool, call it whatever you'd like, now it allows that homeowner to see exactly why the solution is being recommended. Fresh air. I mean, you talk about going from 10 air changes to 2. I hope that they considered fresh air as a part of now that indoor environment, because you've completely changed everything. You've yep. changed everything from load calcs to that indoor environment to now creating almost like a Yeti cooler, a nice, good cooler that's going to keep everything inside that home and trap it in there. So now that's where we start to educate and step into the solution to the problem. But the monitor gives that visibility to what we're talking about.
Yeah. Brandon, I know that April Air, I don't know if you guys partnered with AirThings at one point to talk about monitoring and stuff like that. Do you have any information on that you can provide us, how you partnered with them and how AirThings can potentially help? Because I have an AirThings monitor in my house, and I have it really close to the return air. grill on the main floor, and I've monitored all kinds of things with it and obviously checked up on it and experimented and stuff like that. And it's really cool to have. Like, if you're kind of nerdy in the HVAC and building performance space, it's really nerdy to have and look at and playing with settings of your humidifier, your dehumidifier, your AC, your HRV, for instance, or whatever fresh air sort of mechanical fresh air implementation that you have for the building. Do you want to talk about monitoring as far as the AirThings partnership you had or still have? Because I'm not sure if it's still ongoing.
Yeah, certainly. So let me start with, we live in a world now where there is a hyper healthy air aware consumer out there, right? And I think that's drawn a lot of interest into this monitoring side of the business. And one of the reasons that we went with in the direction that we did with the AirThings was it's about gaining knowledge of what's happening personally. What's going on inside of your home? You can make generalized statements based upon the environment or the area of the country that you're living in that suggests that you may need certain products. But when you get an AirThings inside of that home and you can actually see, hey, in my house, maybe in where I sleep or where my kids sleep, all those different areas, these are the problems that are occurring. And in this new world that we're living in, you see homeowners wanting to invest in solutions, right? But they don't necessarily know, A, are those investments paying off, or B, am I investing in the right things? And that constant monitoring that AirThings provides will enable us to really dive into understanding what's happening inside of the home. And plus, proof's in the pudding, right? They can see where they may tend to go out and get a solution for the perceived, I've got dry air in my home, 'tis the season kind of conversation. And through that, they may find out that, hey, these portables that we have that we think are working, they're not necessarily working, or it's a bigger issue than we thought. Also, it's a device that makes you aware of the things that you're not accustomed to, right? I know one of the things that was on ours was radon, right? And being able to see that there was potential radon exposure inside of a home, something that you don't have an alarm in your house for, those are the kind of invaluable informational pieces that really are going to not only help our industry have a better conversation with the homeowner, but help a homeowner justify why they want to make more investment into the health of the air inside of their home.
Yeah, for sure. And radon, I think a lot of new builds are having to rough in radon mechanical systems these days. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. As a matter of fact, it's increasing. It's becoming more code-driven in more places. The more testing that's done, the more that we're finding out just how significant the problem is. And because it is a problem that both the EPA and the U.S. Surgeon General have decided they wanted to tackle, it's moving at a really fast pace and something that our industry is uniquely positioned to be able to tackle.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me take this conversation to filtration. And we can sort of tackle each sort of pillar of indoor air quality for a few minutes. Now, no matter what you think, this is going back to when COVID began. And no matter what you think of COVID from the political landscape and all that kind of stuff, it doesn't matter, because regardless of what you think of that and the whole thing, it drove a lot of indoor air quality conversation. It did it regardless, right? And one of the things that people started talking about is these MERV 13 filters, and it's the minimum requirement for that you should have in your home to keep a healthy indoor air quality. Now, a lot of people were putting MERV 13s in and not even looking at the fact that our total external static pressure of a system would increase because the ductwork was already undersized. It was choking the airflow. And not really realizing you can't just swap a filter for a higher MERV rating without maybe making some modifications first, without potentially looking at, instead of putting in a 1-inch, look at putting in a deeper pleated filter that has a lower pressure drop. And I've been on that for a very long time about these deeper pleats, because they got more surface area, they got less pressure drop. You could probably get away with taking out the 1-inch with the MERV 13 and putting in like a 5-inch filter that's a MERV 13 and mitigate any of the airflow problems that the 1-inch caused. Chris, what do you think about that, first of all? Because it is something that a lot of people can't wrap their head around. They're like, well, wait a minute, the filter's 5 inches thick. How in the world is the pressure drop not more over a 1 inch, right?
The much-anticipated Ambro Controls OxySet backpack is coming soon. It's on their website on Ambro Controls, and I took a couple of snapshots of it just to show you guys that it's available. I'm waiting for my order to come in so I can demo it. But if you guys like that set, there's also workings in the process to bring this set up to Canada. It's around the oxygen cylinders and stuff because it's proprietary. There's some stuff that's going on there, but they're dealing with it. Look forward to that backpack, and hopefully soon up in Canada, hopefully in 2024, we get this set up here.
You're exactly correct. And interestingly enough, I was at a distributor event this earlier this week, and I used MERV 16 as an example, because we know mm-hmm. in the residential sector, it's pretty much the most affordable yet best efficiency capture rate in, mm-hmm. in the residential market.
Okay.
And I asked this group, there was 57 total people in this group, and I said, how many MERV 16s has this distributor sold in the last year? And nobody raised their hand. Mm-hmm. And I asked the question, well, why not? And it took a little while, but finally somebody answered the question and said, well, it's too restrictive. And if all things were equal, it's too restrictive to what? A MERV 13, a MERV 11, a 1-inch filter? What are we comparing to into what you had just spoken to in looking at system design parameters? And really, that's where, when you're talking about filtration, and it has to start with the airflow dynamics first. If we're doing our job exceptionally well, we're looking at all of those parameters and what is our total external static pressure on the system that allows a MERV 13 or a MERV 16 filter to be installed in that place. Because believe me, we've got some studies that show a 1-inch pleated filter has a greater static pressure drop than, say, a MERV 16 filter. Mm-hmm. That understanding of depth versus surface loading plus longevity of the filter is just not, it's not being utilized in a way to educate the consumer on the importance for their indoor health, their equipment's efficiency, and protecting and preserving for cleaner system performance long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Brandon, thoughts?
Yeah. Look, you got to take both things into account, right? You got to make sure that the system's breathing, but you got to make sure that the people in the house are breathing clean too, right? And it's that most common misconception of thoughts that, exactly as you put it, that 5-inch filter, is that going to choke off the system? I think that education is a really important piece that we need to bring up here. The more we can get out and educate people within our industry to get rid of some of those myths, man, the easier that we're going to have it. Because modern technology, it's real simple. Surface area allows for breathability. And if you eliminate things that are MERV Infinity, but also 100% restriction like cardboard and plastics, you can really improve on that efficiency of a system and give the homeowner the peace of mind that they want in breathing fresh air, keep the system clean, and keep the system running healthier. And in a lot of cases, I think you brought it up right at the beginning, sometimes pulling out that 1-inch and putting in that 5-inch can drop the static, not increase it.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Yeah, 100%.
And Gary, really quickly, I kind of want to tie the previous subject and this subject together, and I'm sure it'll even build on further subjects that we're going to talk about. AirThings just released their 2023 report on air quality. And it was interesting because I won't go through the bullet points, but I do want to pull one out that will tie this all together. So air quality monitoring.
Yep.
Let's talk about source removal, filtration. We all know that every mm-hmm. system has to have a filter of some capacity.
Yep.
Last year, this is across North America, the annual average level of indoor air pollution for 2023 was 39% higher than the recommended levels for safe air by the World Health Organization. Mm-hmm. When we speak about the opportunity to improve the indoor environment, it's using these kinds of studies, these kinds of tools and solutions to provide the best indoor environment for the people that are living in.
Yeah. And I think that schools should start teaching this stuff, because like when you go to a trade school and you're learning about HVAC or I mean, not refrigeration, but HVAC, because it's got the V in there for ventilation. We should start learning about this in schools, because it wasn't taught to me in school. Right. Great. And I was always taught that the filter is there to protect the appliance from getting dirty, which yes, 100% it is. But now when we put monitoring in, and we see that we have a PM 2.5 or a PM1 at a very high level, that can be concerning to some people that understand that a PM level that's high, that's that low, a PM level, like a particulate matter that's that low in size, that small in size, but high in range, can actually affect someone's health, like big time over the long haul. So it's about not just the health of the system, it's about the health of the occupants in the home. And that's what indoor air quality is all about. I want to bring the conversation to filter bypass. And I just did a little demo with one of your filters on this. Filter bypass was something I've never even thought of up until a couple of years back. If you just throw a filter into, if a sheet metal guy comes along, puts the filter rack in, and you throw your filter in, I mean, how much bypass do you have around that filter? Probably a substantial amount, especially when the filter gets loaded and it can't move through the filter. It's finding the path of least resistance around it. It's going to get into the airstream, the supply. It's going to get on your coil, your evaporator coil. It can get on your secondary heat exchanger. It can cause drain clogs. So mitigating the bypass around the filter is super important when we talk about the science of monitoring and particulate matter and cleanliness of a coil and drain clogs and all that stuff. Brandon, I'll put this one to you. What are your thoughts on filtration bypass and mitigating it with the proper cabinet and the proper filter?
Oh, it's absolutely essential, right? If you're not cleaning all of the air, or as much of it as you possibly can, going through a system, you're not preventing problems, you're just simply delaying them, right? If we capture 70%, maybe 72% of the air moving through the system, well, that means 28% of that airflow and whatever it's carrying with it is still making its way in. And when I speak to HVAC contractors and we have this conversation about airflow, it's one of their biggest concerns, because almost always that is either directly the reason why the system has failed, or it's tied to the problem that ultimately caused that system to fail. So if you don't have a proper cabinet sealed in a proper fashion, utilizing a proper filter, you're just ultimately going to lead down a path of failure that is, by the way, something that's avoidable. It's not a conversation that we need to have if we do it the right way.
Yeah, agreed. So this is a polarizing topic. Very polarizing, and I want to get your thoughts on it. If we implement the three pillars of IAQ, filtration, ventilation, and humidity control, we can have a pretty good indoor air quality, like pretty decent, actually even above decent. What are your thoughts on adding a UV lamp above a coil or underneath a coil, an evaporator, just to help kill any sort of microbial or any sort of anything that is fine enough or small enough to get through a filter that it might not show up as like debris or dirt, but it could be something else. What are your thoughts on UV lights, Chris?
I made a social media post about this when it comes to the privacy within smart thermostats. There was a study done, 80% of homeowners were sort of not scared, but a little bit weary of privacy issues around smart thermostats, thinking the temperature can be changed, the data that is on the stat could be pulled off. Well, Sensi is assuring you and assuring me and your customers that there is no privacy issues with their thermostats. They're not selling back information. They are not controlling the thermostats. These government-run programs or utility-run programs in the past have done that, where they lock you out and they change temperatures like that. But that's usually a free thermostat. You got to opt into the program. But if you buy your own Sensi, they've assured you this is not going to happen with their thermostat, and they're not selling your information back to anyone else.
Well, it starts with the filter first. So if we're talking about dirty components, capturing the particulates, source removal. But as good as our filters are, it's not 100% efficient. So there's always going to be a percentage of first pass that something could get captured to the evaporator coil. Now, the interesting part when you start to break down your evaporator coils is it becomes its own microbiology system, as you mentioned. We use words like biofilms, and biofilms are created by different components of the air that start to collect on the evaporator coil. And then as you add the water to that, it becomes a microbiology and starts to breed and live its own life on this coil.
Yeah, science, do a little science project on the science project, high school science project on the coil.
Yeah, and this is something as a technician for many, many years myself that, you know, like you said, it takes years to learn a lot of this. And coming out of a trade school or even being kind of taught on the ropes in the trucks with seasoned technicians, these are just things that even a good senior technician doesn't understand fully. They're just like, oh, UV, that's kind of just, you know, it's just another thing to sell. Mm-hmm. But when you break it down and we are prioritizing the occupants of the home first and foremost, high efficient filtration, UV coil surface sanitization, it's all been proven by our industry to work in the capacities if it's installed and maintained correctly. And I feel that UVC in the way it should be used is just another pillar in the air purification market that is safe, it's reliable, and it could be a huge, huge component of a healthier indoor environment.
Yeah. Brandon, do you agree with that or do you have anything to say on UV at all?
No, I absolutely do. I think I'm going to take it even a step further. I think it's absolutely essential because the way, when you think about what a UV light is actually doing, right? I mean, its job is to take care of mold, bacteria, and germs. That's its primary focus. And the coil, as you mentioned, that's where it starts to build up. People think about that in that term. However, the way that those items spread is by moving themselves through airstreams, right? And that's how they move from your HVAC coil to your floors, to your carpets, to your mattresses, to the insulation inside of the walls. And I could go on and spreading problems. The genesis of these problems oftentimes can be that untreated coil. And you can put the best air filtration system before that possible. But if you're not taking care of that biological buildup, you're just shooting out a problem with your airflow that you, again, completely avoidable.
Yeah. And I think there's industry people that get upset when companies are going in and selling UV lights to people, but not putting in the proper filtration system first. Right. As you said, Chris, it starts with filtration and the UV is to supplement the filtration of the filter in the HVAC system. And there's a lot of people that are, they, if you make a post about a UV light that gets put in, there's a lot of negative comments to it because it's like, hey, I'm just trying to sell this magic box to this homeowner that's supposed to take care of all your problems. And a lot of times these people are putting it in thinking that it's going to solve all the problems because they're not fully educated on everything else that indoor air quality needs and is built upon. So putting in a UV light, yes, it's going to help the coil, but we got to start with that filter first. I think we can all agree on that, right?
Agree.
Oh, absolutely.
Cool. Okay. All right. So let's move on to some ventilation. Ventilation is something that is super important. And as you said, Chris, when I was talking about my customer bringing his air changes down, it was brought up heavily to him and he's well aware and it's on his radar to look at and monitor what his indoor air levels are like when it comes to CO2, not CO, I mean, unless he's driving his car in his house and turning the engine on, but CO2. And I mean, that's one of the major ones for me in my home, because with my HRV off for 24 hours, we're up over 1,000 parts per million. With it on in the high mode, we're down around 600 to 700 in 24 hours. So I'm really getting that CO2 and I'm really moving it out of the home and keeping the air a little bit more fresh, because we all know that, or maybe we don't all know, but CO2 is going to cause headaches and fatigue and nausea and make people feel sick. And that's to do with the sick building syndrome. When everybody tightened up buildings and didn't think about ventilation, The CO levels, who knows how high they were in these buildings with all these people walking around and breathing. They could have been through the roof, right? I mean, it's not just sick building. It's also sick people in the building because they can't function properly. So ventilation, Chris, like, how important is ventilation to mitigate some of the indoor air quality things that we don't want in our home?
One of the studies that I always like to educate on was a partnership between ASHRAE and the CDC. And this dated back to 2005. And they were studying buildings and homes in how infectious diseases are spread amongst humans. We are the movers of that.
Yeah.
And then what they ended up coming up with was it's a multi-pronged approach. You need three of those components, those pillars, exactly what the subject is today that we're here talking about. But the study went on to further say, well, if we're really focusing in on infectious diseases, the number one strategy is fresh air, because we're getting into what's called the dilution and the replacement of the air. And I like to use the little, we talk about science experiments. If you just take a simple glass of water and you put some food coloring in it and you go to the faucet, you've got your volume, which is your glass. You got the water, which we can analogize as the air. And then as you're pumping in that clean water, that's perceived clean water that's coming in, you're going to dilute and eventually all the water is going to become clear. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a very similar process to our homes in a more controlled and limited manner. And that's where the disconnect with ventilation in the industry goes to oftentimes is right now, I would say a high percentage of ventilation systems that are installed are first and foremost code minimum requirements or energy requirements. It's not being promoted like a filtration system, like a UVC or a humidifier, for instance. They're trying to meet code minimum. Now, things are starting to improve. We are seeing this improvement, but there's a lot of uncertainties of, well, if I'm tightening up a home to minimize outside air coming in, why am I going to cut a 6-inch hole in the side of it to bring that air back in? And that's got to be that level set understanding. It's controlled. It's a source. It could be limited. It could be filtered, especially with all the wildfires that have happened over the years. It's just a higher level of understanding.
Yeah. So Brandon, I'm gonna tell you something through experience working in the commercial world. Economizers are slapped onto the side of rooftops, and they're supposed to be there for economy cooling and to provide fresh air for the building. But what I see, especially online, is technicians are, if there's a problem with the economizer, they're just bypassing them and slamming the damper shut. And I'm always like, guys, it's such easy money. Learn the economizers. Once you learn them, they're not difficult to troubleshoot. It's easy money to fix them. And if you educate the customer and you take an air monitoring device into an office, in a commercial office, and go, your economizer's closed, I want to put this monitor in here for a couple hours and show you what sort of effect that's having on your indoor air. I mean, what do you think in the commercial world? There's so many economizers that are not working because technicians are afraid to work on them, and it's not helping any with the indoor air quality. What are your thoughts on that? Especially with, I mean, the technician just ignoring it and closing it as their solution.
Well, I tell you what, you hit on it, and it's kind of one of these, we don't know what we don't know. That's not just in our industry. We got to assume that's outside of our industry too, right? And I think that ultimately there has been a concern of whether or not people are willing to solve a problem. Not necessarily an HVAC technician deciding that they want to fix an economizer or whatever, but do people want to invest in solving these ventilation problems inside of their home, inside of their business, wherever the case may be? Ultimately, we kind of let that fear drive our decision-making more often than not. And that has become something that I think as an industry, we can do a better job with. If we just simply ask ourselves, how can I present this information to the decision maker in a way that will allow them to understand? And I think you hit the nail on the head. For a lot of it, it's just being willing to offer that education through something like a monitoring device, being able to show that negative impact of not having proper ventilation and how that's allowing for all of these different VOCs to build up inside of the air, and the impact that can have directly on your performance, your sleep, your health, all of that tied back together. I think we could definitely step up and make that something that we are rushing towards in 2024, solving that issue and not sitting back from.
Yeah, I like how you brought it into the conversation about being a solution specialist, because basically if you're just holding a wrench and a screwdriver and you're just fixing a dead compressor or whatever's broken and just getting it back up and running, yeah, sure, you're providing a solution, but you're not looking at the whole landscape of the solutions that you can provide. There's so much more there when it comes to indoor air quality, but you have to show and educate the customer first. Cause if you just walk in and say, hey, listen, I want to give you this filter because you're trying to make an upsell or an upgrade to your install, but you provide no reason why, it just looks like you're trying to make an upgrade or an upsell to the customer. It looks like you're just trying to sell them on something else so you can make more money. Without the education base, there's no real way that you're going to get that sale in an ethical manner, as far as I'm concerned, especially if the technician that's trying to sell it doesn't even understand why he's selling it in the first place. Chris, what do you have any thoughts on that? Like ethical sales and understanding why you're selling it to the customer in the first place and backing it up with literature, websites, anything that you can give them to show them this is why I'm recommending it. It's not just because I'm trying to upsell you.
One of the things and the blessings that Brandon and I get to do is we get to travel amongst North America. We get to sit with a lot of contractors and distributors. And one of the biggest challenge in this industry is selling. Technicians specifically typically don't want to sell. They are the fix-it people. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. We do need a percentage of those people out there. However, now we get into this opportunity to help and provide. I like what you said there. I think that should be something you can. Solution solver. I love it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as a technician that walks in with that desire to want to help somebody to the next level, I like to ask the question this way. If I'm with a contractor and there's multiple technicians, and I think this would resonate with your crowd as well, is I'll ask, how many times do you walk into a house and you make a pitch of some sort and the response from the homeowner is, every time you guys are in here, you try to sell me something? And it's amazing what happens in that group setting, because all of a sudden everybody loosens up. There's an outroar of going, oh man, we hear that all the time. And I let them go for about a minute and then I try to reel them back in, and I got to stop and say, that's because they are trying to be sold something. Mm-hmm. And it's not the right approach. There's a right way and there's a wrong way. We can make an offer on a filter, on a UV, on a fresh air, a humidifier, insert product. But it starts with why. If I'm down in a basement, in an attic, and I see dirty components, I pull open that blower door and I see that blower's dirty. That's instantly an education opportunity. I don't have to sell them on a filter. I have to educate them on what the problem is and why it's there at hand. Take them down the education path. Use the sources, like you said. Utilize those industry sources. There's a lot of really good ones out there. And then ultimately, it's going to be one final thing. Well, what do I need to do to get rid of that problem or prevent that problem again? Glad you asked, Gary. This is what we can do for you.
Mm-hmm. And if I could just expand on that, just go on.
Go ahead, Brandon.
Yep. You know, I again, like Chris said, we have the pleasure of meeting service technicians every day, and amazing how smart our industry is. We don't have to necessarily feel like we're selling them anything. Exactly. Honestly, we just need to literally show them their home. Not our opinions, not anything, you know, special. Show them their home. I was recently with an HVAC contractor who showed me how they do that. And one of their items that they do is they remove a return grill in the bedroom. And they show the homeowner what's inside of that return air grill. They take a paper towel, they wipe it, and boom, put it right in front of their face. And then they explain to the homeowner how that happened and its effects on the system. Now, what we're not doing there is selling air cleaning or duct cleaning or anything else. What we're showing them is, hey, this is your world. This is the world you live in today. You let me know if you want to continue to live in that world or if you'd like me to do something about it. That's as powerful as any selling tool we could provide.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I love that you said that, because for years I would take physical parts out of machines, pictures and videos, and I show them to customers and I say, listen, this is your problem right here. And there's a couple of solutions that we can look at to fix it. Are you interested? I don't just walk down from the roof or up from a basement and go, yeah, your furnace is fixed. By the way, we have a deal on filters this month. You know what I mean? And here, let's get you into a new Cadillac filter. It's solution based, and it's based on what the home is already experiencing. I mean, if you see the coils perfectly clean, I mean, the humidity's great. The vent, everything's fine in the house. You could walk out of there and go, you know what? I don't need to provide you any solutions because your indoor air quality is amazing. But most of the times it's not. Most of the times it's not, right? You can find something that can be improved upon, but without the education, without the proof, like taking the grill off or taking pictures of the blower wheel or even taking the blower out and cleaning it and taking a video of you cleaning it and watching all that brown water leave the blower wheel and showing it. This is what your blower wheel, this is what the water in the blower wheel looks like when it's coming out. Do you want to prevent this from happening again? Yes or no? If the answer is no, but it at least you've shown them, and at least it's off your back. You get it off of your conscience, right?
And that's exactly what it is. You allow them to make the decision. We don't make it for you, right?
That's right.
That's the game changer in our industry. Let them make the decision.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the last few minutes here, let's just tackle humidity control real quick. I mean, we could get into humidification and dehumidification and go down rabbit holes. So let's just generalize it to end this off. Chris, how important is humidity control? I mean, too much humidity, we can start generating mold. Not enough humidity, we can have issues with drying out building materials. How important is it?
The pillars that are within humidity control, and I like what you said there, it's a year-round approach, humidification and dehumidification. Within those, that category, the three pillars are health, comfort, and preservation. Everything that a homeowner typically knows what to do is to control their temperature without the consideration of humidity. And then when we add that component into it, we think about, all right, things like, hey, we're going to feel warmer at a cooler temperature, or flip that script. We're going to work better with our air conditioning because we have a source of latent removal. We're going to be able to preserve our homes that we spend a lot of time in and a lot of money on. There's a lot of things that go into that humidity control specifically, and then that health attribute. You know, we talked about all this. Moisture is the key ingredient to a lot of this and what allows things to thrive, dormant, or die. If we can minimize that and try to maintain a range of humidity control year round, we're going to have far better, healthier, and more comfortable homes year round.
Mm-hmm. And Brandon, sorry, I was about to call you Brandy there for a minute. Sorry, it's because your manly face is not on my screen. That's why.
This is on me. I accept it.
Anyway, so I'm pretty sure, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was you that told me, and you brought this up when we had our conversation a couple years back about the high humidity and bed bug thing. Was that you?
Yeah, that was me.
Okay.
That's one of my go-tos.
Can you bring that back up, please? Because I just refresh my memory and the audience's.
Yeah. So, going the way, way back machine. And once upon a time, I worked with an organization and they were doing some marketing with a mattress company. And they were trying to understand how to sell mattresses, sell pillows, et cetera, to regular consumers. And one of the studies that they had done was directly on how humidity impacted the health of your mattress. And specifically, one area they tied it to was the dust mite. And what they found was, in a typical home, that the weight of a queen-size mattress that's 9 years old, 30% of the weight of that mattress is dust mite parts, and dust mite feces.
Okay, so it was dust mites, not bed bugs. Okay.
Well, yep.
Big difference.
Well, big difference to a point, yeah. First of all, when I found that out, I bought a new bed in about 9 seconds. But ultimately, all I was doing was upgrading the condo because the reason for the problem was excess humidity inside of the home. That dust mite needs moisture in order to survive. And if we simply were to have dehumidified the home, that mattress, which, by the way, when we're talking 30%, we're talking 25, 30 pounds of weight that we're discussing here. It's not an insignificant number. But as they expanded that, by the way, they found out that that's true about additional things, like bed bugs, by the way, are tied back to that. And so it's why you see industries outside of ours so prominently selling humidity control, because of how well it tackles things like insects, bugs, and other creepy crawlies that I don't even want to tell you what was happening inside of your pillow, but it can all be controlled through proper humidification.
Now, let me ask you this, Brandon. I've been to homes where they don't have AC and you walk in the middle of the summer and it's stifling hot outside, the humidity's high, and it's a very musty smelling smell inside the house. And and I'm going to tell you how this changed a little bit. It was a customer. They didn't have AC in the house for years. They didn't have it. And once they got the AC in, when you go into the home, when it's the temperature is down a set point and it's done some humidity removal, that mustiness is not gone, but it's lessened. Do you have anything to say on that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially what's happening there is mold needs water in order to propagate and spread, okay?
Yeah.
And typically, if we go back a little bit, back, say, in like the 80s, when air conditioners would run all the time, cold coils, air movement, you would notice less of that musty smell in the home because a large portion of what they had to do was get rid of that latent heat, right? They had to get rid of the water from the air. So because there was less water in the air, mold, mildew, fungus, etc., didn't have as much to grow off of, and the problem didn't exist. Now, what you're seeing is in homes that either don't have air conditioning or in homes that are using these higher efficiency air conditioning systems, you're not getting the same run times that you used to, which can actually increase the problem, not mitigate it. Because if you're lowering temperature inside of a home without removing water, you're increasing the relative humidity in the air. And by increasing that relative humidity in the air, you're giving more of what those mold, mildews, and funguses need in order to thrive and propagate throughout the house. That's that musty smell that we're smelling. It's a myotoxin that they produce when they spread their spores throughout the house. It's mm-hmm. also what can make you sick. So mechanical dehumidification in order to control that is really the only piece that you can throw in nowadays to be sure that you're handling the job because it's simply the world that we live in today.
Yeah. Okay. So Chris, I'll bring this to you and then we can end it off. What Brandon said about systems not running long enough, this comes back to a lot of design issues where technicians and company owners are like, okay, your house is that size, you get that size of unit. And it's not really a good way to do things because the oversize, the short cycling, the humidity control that's not there, that's a big issue. Where, for me anyway, is where I find the humidity levels get high in the home is the shoulder seasons. And this is where I would love to do some form of dehumidification in the home. The AC is not running because it's not, we don't have the sensible load to bring the AC on, but our latent load is high because in the spring it's raining, it's foggy. You get the moisture coming into the home. Talk about the shoulder seasons and how we can mitigate moisture issues in the home when we can't run the AC. We have to utilize a mechanical dehumidification system at that point, right?
I think you highlighted it very well, Gary. I mean, the fact that the thermostat is a sensible measurement, it's not looking at the latent or the moisture that's in the air. you need a machine that's going to be able to look and focus and prioritize on that water removal, that dehumidification. And professional dehumidification is the best option in that case. Now, I will tell you, Brandon and I, and I know a lot of our field sales force members that are all across North America get the request every year, hey, come on in, do training on dehumidification. And we come in and do it. The biggest challenge with professional level dehumidification is implementing it as a common solution to a lot of the problems, whether it's a shoulder season problem or it is a partnership with your central air conditioning. One of the things that I'll get into during these kinds of trainings is let's look at a typical air conditioning system. Let's look at its sensible versus its latent BTU ratio at its design condition. Most of the time, these air conditionings range around 75% sensible, 25% latent, which means it's approximately a 25% efficient dehumidifier. If I was trying to sell you that today, nobody would probably buy a 25% efficient dehumidifier. Mm-hmm. But, and another way I put it to technician is, hey, you know, it's the hottest day of the year. They have no cooling. You go out there. It's the easiest fix. The capacitor is blown. Takes you a couple minutes. You put it in there. You fire it up. How long does it take for that air conditioner to cool the house down? It takes hours, if not all day long, because it has to bring the water out first before it starts lowering the temperature. And that's just a proving factor. So I know I segued a little bit off of your question around the shoulder seasons, but I felt that you highlighted that very well. And I wanted to add that additional commentary into your central air conditioning system as well.
Yeah. I mean, I used to do a lot of pharmaceutical plants and even warehouses, some of the pharmaceutical warehouses, they were all had dehumidification capable rooftops. And if you walked into one of those buildings in the middle of the summer, it was just like you actually felt the moisture evaporating off your body as soon as you walked in.
Right.
It was incredible. It was just so comfortable. I mean, it was cool. It was dry. So there's a real benefit to it. Anyway, guys, we went longer than I anticipated. So, and I know you guys are busy. So thank you very much, guys. This was a really good conversation.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Gary. Really appreciate the time.
Oh, shit. Sorry, hold on.